Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to another episode of The Basketball Truth, presented by the Red Light Sports Network, with your host, as always, Kevin Cunningham. Before I get into the All-Star Weekend festivities in the NBA this past weekend, got to give a shout-out to DraftKings. They've been with us for a while now on the website at redlightsportsnetwork.com, where all of our blogs and podcasts, ranging from, you know, NBA, NFL, college hoops, college basketball, baseball, tons of stuff on there. Again, all of our blogs and podcasts are there, whether they're from a year ago or from a couple days ago, over at the redlightsportsnetwork.com. DraftKings, click and go logo near the top of the page. Football season's over, until a lot of people, you know, most of the country is into football. But basketball season is here. Now the football season's done. Basketball's kind of in the forefront now. And DraftKings has daily leagues, whether it's collegiate hoops or NBA, now that the All-Star Weekend's done. Obviously, starting up, I think, Thursday is when NBA play kicks up again. The last 30, 31, 32-ish games for each team are coming up starting Thursday, I believe. And so DraftKings, again, will start up with NBA, daily NBA leagues, ranging from free, you know, up to, you know, if you're a high roller listening to this podcast, DraftKings can be for you, as well as the guy looking to put in, or gal looking to put in a quarter, or, again, there are free leagues over at DraftKings.com regarding basketball stuff. Again, whether it's NBA or collegiate, DraftKings, click and go logo on our website at theredlightsportsnetwork.com. Definitely give that a look at. But talking about the All-Star Weekend tonight, going to have a show Thursday, probably with someone else regarding the Eastern Conference and what to look for, you know, the last 30 or so games in the regular season. But had a show a few days ago regarding the West before Valentine's Day weekend / All-Star weekend. Same thing. But, again, about 30 games left to go. Already talked about the West. Basically, 7 teams strong. OKC's still looking to push for that 8th spot. I ultimately think they get it. They're half a game behind Phoenix right now. Phoenix is 29-25. OKC is 28-25. Again, on Thursday, we'll be running through the East. Who are the serious contenders? Who are teams that have surprised? Is it Atlanta's to take? Does Cleveland have an outside shot if they get things rolling? Is Cleveland the 5 seed that they show that they are right now? You know, are they just another middle-of-the-pack team? Vegas says otherwise as far as odds go for winning the title or coming out of the Eastern Conference even. So betting-wise, they're not your traditional 5 seed at the moment. But we'll be talking about the East again over on Thursday. Not sure the time. It'll probably be a little later. Not sure yet. You can follow the show on Twitter at RLSNBasketball for more details on when that show gets scheduled. But we'll run through the East again over on our website. You can check out the podcast overlooking the West and what these last 30 games have in store for that. But getting into this weekend, on Friday, I didn't get a chance to watch anything that went over the weekend live, but taped all the stuff on Saturday, taped the All-Star game on Sunday. Didn't realize that the World USA game was on Friday, kind of the Rising Stars game. So I didn't get a chance to look at that, only getting a chance to look at box scores, read up on it. But my analysis on that, the World won 121-112. Like the All-Star game, it doesn't exactly mean much to win those games. But at the same time, you can get a chance to see the potential of some of the younger guys in the league. living in Wisconsin, being 45 minutes, an hour away from Milwaukee. The Bucks have been a nice story in the Eastern Conference. They've been doing it with a lot of defense. I mean, if you tune into even one of their games, it's easy to tell that they try defensively, and that's what has kept them in the, could say, thick of things in the Eastern Conference to this point, even without Jabari Parker, which most people thought would end up being the Rookie of the Year. That's not going to be the case because of injury, but you know, with or without Jabari, Milwaukee is going to be a top six seed in the Eastern Conference. And defense is a huge part of it. Another part of it is Giannis Antetokounmpo. He had a couple times to shine this weekend. Obviously, one of them was this World vs. USA game where he had 12 points, 10 boards, 5 assists. I would say that's, I mean, just looking at the box scores, probably had the most productive game in terms of sheer numbers. He also had 5 turnovers, but he also had four steals and 2 blocks. So, you know, yeah, he turned the ball over more than you'd like to, obviously, but realistically, these games, there are a lot of turnovers because there is a lot of careless play. Again, I didn't get to see the game, so I can't really, you know, break down what Giannis's turnovers looked like. At the same time, to pick up 4 steals, that ties for a game high. He had a couple blocks, which was second in the game behind Rudy Gobert, who has been a monster to this point this season. But again, 12 points, 10 boards, 5 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks. That's what Giannis is kind of doing on a nightly basis. You know, he's not averaging a double-double, obviously, but especially as of late, he's been able to pile up high rebound numbers. And at 6'11", there's, you know, that it doesn't, it should translate as he ages. From what I remember, he is 20 years old. I'm pretty sure he's 20 years old. I'll check now to make sure, but yeah, he's 20. So, you know, a 6'11 small forward, I guess you could say, who, you know, is willing and able to play defense, as you can, you know, just tell by looking at a box score with steals and blocks on any given night. But he's also starting to become a better rebounder, and offensively, he's only growing. He's not a great offensive player to this point, but he is starting to get his jump shot down, which is huge for him because he's basically a Kevin Durant-type build. Clearly not the scoring, doesn't have the scoring prowess at this point, and I don't think he ever will. I ultimately think Kevin Durant's going to end his career as the scoring leader in all-time NBA history. So, you know, Giannis to sniff that level of offensive efficiency is kind of ridiculous because if he did, then he would be the best player in the league. You know, he's never going to average 27 a night, but if he can average close to 20 and get, say, 8 boards a game, as well as a couple steals, a couple blocks, dish out 4 or 5 assists, I mean, he's going to be the real deal. To me, it's just a matter of time until he truly develops his offensive game. And once his defensive game gets refined, he's got all the pure raw skills that you would want from a 6'11 wing. Again, that's, you know, he's got Kevin Durant-type length athleticism, and he's 20 years old. So sky's the limit for him, and the Bucks' future ultimately isn't just about Jabari Parker. Brandon Knight was also part of the All-Star Weekend. I'll get into what, you know, each of the events from this past weekend. But Knight, Giannis Antetokounmpo, just a couple of the young guys that are showing promise for the Bucks, and there's a reason why, you know, I certainly won't be picking against them no matter who they play, even if it's the Hawks. I mean, I shouldn't say not pick against them because I ultimately would pick the Hawks to beat the Bucks, but I guess the correct wording would be bet against the Bucks. because, again, defensively they can hang around with any team, and they can score if they need to. Team that's only on the rise. And I think Jason Kidd, being their head coach, ultimately was the right decision to hire him because they're playing for him at an extraordinarily high level, especially on the defensive end. And with a young coach and an extremely young team, probably minus Larry Sanders now, if you haven't heard about his probable buyout at this point. You know, they're a crazy young team with a crazy young coach with a ridiculous amount of potential for years to come. So, interesting stuff happening in Milwaukee. Outside of that, Andrew Wiggins scored 22 points, had 6 boards, 4 assists. You know, that's the number one pick that people expected him to be. Minnesota, also like Milwaukee, has a couple young guys, quite a few young guys, young core to build around. At the same time, Zach LaVine isn't exactly what you would call a good NBA player at this point, like Antetokounmpo or what Parker was showing. You know, LaVine ultimately is pure entertainment at this point. Coming out of college, I didn't believe he would be a good NBA player, and even now, even though his hype is as big as it ever has been, I still don't think he's going to be a good NBA player. Ultimately, he's an unbelievable athlete, as he showed, but you know, the Timberwolves' future, as far as looking at which young guys can ultimately lead their team, I think the Bucks have a couple, and 3 if you include Brandon Knight, if you think he's the guy long-term to be their point guard. But with Minnesota, it definitely starts with Wiggins. And, again, I didn't get to see any of this game, but he's been showing up lately for Minnesota in real games that matter. Not to say that Minnesota's doing well this season, but you know, they're going to wrap up another, let's see, where are they at now? They're the second worst team in the league. They're going to get a top 5 pick. And in this draft, there are at least 5 really strong players that I don't think can bust. I think you're going to get, there are probably 5, 6, 7 players that you can legitimately count on being very good NBA players, at the least. It's just a matter of how high their upside is. Can they be superstars? You know, I'm not saying there are 5, 6, 7 stars coming out of this draft, but you're getting at least 5 or 6 guys that easily, without a doubt, can provide major contributions to a championship-level team in the NBA. So Minnesota's another team that's not exactly dead in the water. Like Milwaukee last year, they struggled. Got that second pick, got Jabari Parker. Their future is extremely bright. And I don't question that Minnesota could potentially be on that same track. Obviously, Milwaukee's ahead of them in that regard. But like Philadelphia, I mean, there are young pieces there in Minnesota to at least make you think that they could be on the right track. Teams like New York, different story. Other things to take away from this game, just looking at box scores. Victor Oladipo, 22 points. Shot 8 of 21 from the field, though. That's not exactly efficient. But Oladipo is a guy that I loved out of the draft. I just think that talent-wise, he's got extraordinary talent. And then you put that together with a crazy desire to be the best and to be great. And I think Oladipo has that. There are not many guys in the league I would take their heart over Victor Oladipo's heart. And that's why I think Oladipo will be an all-star for years to come. I think Orlando is another team that will, because they already do have the young core that they want, but they're going to be a very dangerous team. Point Victor Oladipo, we got the two, Aaron Gordon, Tobias Harris, that kind of 3-4, and then Nikola Vucevic at the five. That's their five. It's just a matter of them getting older, gelling as a team, getting the right coach, believing in a philosophy that works for them, and Orlando is going to be just fine. They haven't kind of taken off with their young core like Milwaukee has, but the pieces are there, and Orlando's not going to be bad for much longer. I think I 100% believe that Oladipo will be a multi-time All-Star. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Again, the world beat the U.S. 121-112 on Friday. Saturday is when the bulk of the weekend occurred. As far as the start of it, I believe it's the skills challenge was the first part, and Patrick Beverley won that one. He beat Brandon Knight in the finals. Again, talked about Knight already in Milwaukee. For me, Brandon Knight is an amazing sixth man, and maybe he can be a starting two on a championship-level team, but to average 5.4 assists as a point guard just doesn't cut it when there are at least 20 other point guards that are at least good in the league. Point guard is extremely deep in the NBA right now, and to average 17-5 is like, eh. Again, he's young. He's got, years of, maturing, not just personally, but his game. So it's not to say that he can't get better, but again, I think he would be an amazing sixth man or backup point guard off the bench. Doesn't have to necessarily be, a Jamal Crawford type pure scorer off the bench, but he can be that spark off the bench that gives you immediate offense and has point guard abilities, obviously. But, again, Patrick Beverley beat him. Knight had 2 threes at the end in the finals before Beverley even got an attempt to beat him. I think Beverley started slow at least the last 2 rounds. Maybe it was every single round. But he just nailed his threes, which was the last part of that skills competition. So that's realistically how he won it. But, again, doesn't mean much. I mean, none of these really mean much at all. But Patrick Beverley, just a defensive guy in Houston, who I believe... I may not be right, but I'm pretty sure it was the case that he wasn't even supposed to be in this skills competition until I think John Wall was in it and couldn't participate. So I think Beverley took his place and obviously ended up winning the whole thing. Especially a skills competition, though, it's really just all about who hits the three balls at the end. Unless you struggle consistently with the first pass, it's basically anyone's for the taking. Next up was a three-point contest, and, I think the three guys that made the finals, it wasn't too much of a shock. You had Steph Curry, you had Klay Thompson, and then you throw in Kyrie Irving there. Most people, myself included, thought Korver do some damage, but Stephen Curry is regarded as the best shooter right now, despite what percentages say. I mean, hats off to Kyle Korver and potentially going 50-50-90 for the first time in NBA history. Obviously, that's an absolutely insane accomplishment that's mind-boggling to me. To make over half your threes you attempt in real game, live scenario. I mean, in practice, to hit 50% of your threes is crazy to me, to literally make every other one. But in a game situation where you have, you know, 6'10 defenders flying at your face from the paint, that's ridiculously impressive. But at the same time, I mean, Steph Curry is regarded as one of, if not the best shooter in the league, and he showed why. There were possible 34 points, and he got 27 in the finals. That was the best round out of any player in any round in the three-point contest. But as far as percentages are concerned, I think the best round ever was 25 out of 30. And so Curry's 27 out of 34 wouldn't have been a better percentage, so to say, because he only hit 2 of 4, if that makes sense. Since other guys had 30, went 25 of 30. And so Stephen had 4 extra points to get, and he got 2 of them, which would only be 50%. 25 out of 30, obviously better than 50%. So just percentage-wise, he didn't have the best statistical round ever. Just a random side note. That's not me trying to put a damper on Stephen's night shooting, because I'm a fan of him. I love watching Golden State because he's fun to watch. The team's fun to watch. They're a very good team, both offensively and defensively, if you look at any numbers possible, including efficiency. Hats off to Curry. Klay Thompson being there at the end, it was kind of cool seeing those two be the last two kind of battle it out. I think, I want to say Kyrie. Kyrie went first and put up 17, which is an okay number. And then Curry went second, got 27. And then Klay Thompson just couldn't, I forgot what he had. He had like 14 or something. But once he knew it was over, it was just kind of chucking them up there. But so it was cool to see Curry and Thompson kind of battle it out in the final round, and Thompson knowing what he had to beat. But as far as takeaways on that, I mean, it just speaks to what Golden State is doing this year. It speaks to what they, you can look at any stat out there offensively, defensively, efficiency-wise on both sides of the ball, they're top 10 in literally everything. I think defensive efficiency, they're actually number one in the league. Curry at the one, Thompson at the two. Then you got guys like Barnes and Iguodala at the three. Draymond Green, David Lee at the four. Andrew Bogut at the five. They're very deep. Leandro Barbosa coming off the bench, a scorer. They're an extremely deep team, and that's, you don't have to be the deepest team to have a great regular season record, but it certainly doesn't hurt. And Golden State being as deep as they are, that's what makes them a great regular season team. And that's not me saying they can't be a great postseason team because of their jump shooting, which people like to stab at them for. But that's why they are 42-9, is because of how deep they are and how many guys they can rotate on a night-to-night basis. Some guys have off nights, if you're playing 2 games and 3 nights, or 3 games and 4 nights, 3 games and 5 nights, 4 games a week. There are times that happens, and so your 8th, 9th, 10th guys need to produce at a bigger level on certain nights than other nights, especially when it comes to the playoffs, where, a day separates every game. Depth is extremely important in the regular season. Not that it's not in the postseason, but it just means a lot more in the regular season. And Golden State at 42-9, best team in the West, ahead of Memphis by 4 games, ahead of third-place Portland by 7, and Houston's 4th, also ahead of them by 7. So Golden State is, to me, locked up a top-2 seed in the West. Ultimately, it's just a matter of them getting over the barrier and proving people wrong that you know, just because they take more jumpers than everyone else doesn't mean they can't be the team to beat, so to say. I still like San Antonio to win the whole thing, but if Golden State makes it out of the West and wins it, certainly doesn't surprise me. Golden State, Memphis, for San Antonio, those are serious contenders to me. Oklahoma City, Houston, Portland, I would be somewhat surprised if they won it all. Obviously, it wouldn't shock me because they're all great teams in the West. Any team that makes the playoffs is a really strong team. If Phoenix were to hold on to the eighth spot, you know, it would certainly surprise me if they won the title. If they can hold on to the eighth spot, they're not, you know, chop liver. They're, any team that makes the playoffs in the Western Conference, even if New Orleans gets their head in there somehow, you know, there's no reason to think that they can't beat anyone in the league. You make the playoffs in the West, you're a very strong team. Golden State, their depth, Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry putting on a show over the All-Star weekend. You know, those two guys are the main reasons why Golden State is where they're at, but their depth also is enormous come regular season time in the NBA. And it's got to be mentioned that head coaching means more or less depending on the sport you coach. In the NBA, ultimately you either have an extraordinary group of guys that buy into what you're doing, and so you don't need necessarily superstars, but you need a lot of really good players that buy into what you're doing, aka the Spurs at this point in their careers. I don't think Tim Duncan is an exceptional player at this age, but I think he's still really good. I think Tony Parker is still really good. I think that entire team, they're all really good players. No superstars, so to say, right now in their careers, but a bunch of really good players that know what they're doing. They know what they want to do. They believe in their coach. So, again, that's why I still favor them to win it all. Atlanta's doing the same thing in the East. They don't necessarily have... I don't think Jeff Teague's a superstar. I don't think Al Horford's a superstar. I don't think Paul Millsap's a superstar. I don't think Kyle Korver's a superstar. But they're all extremely really good players that buy in on both ends of the floor and know what it means to be a team in the NBA. And so they're succeeding. You don't need stars, but, you know, a coach can do a lot. But if you have, you know, a couple great players like Golden State has in Curry and Thompson, you know, I could coach Golden State to a top 8 seed in the West. Being the number 1 seed, different story. I think any informed NBA fan would like to think that they can coach, you know, a really good team and make them, you know, a legitimate title contender. But, you know, deep down, realistically, I would like to think that Steve Kerr is a better head coach for the Golden State Warriors than I am. But that said, I honestly think that I could coach the Warriors to a top spot in the West. It's just based on talent. I mean, Charles Barkley mentioned it not too long ago, you know, talking about analytics, that you can kind of throw analytics out the window. You either have players or you don't. Yeah, they can buy into a system, and yeah, it can make a lot of difference, a.k.a. Atlanta, a.k.a. San Antonio right now, two of the best teams in the league. But, you know, you look at the last, I forgot what it was. I think it was close to 20, at least 15 champions in the NBA. And they either had Kobe Bryant on the team, Tim Duncan on the team, or LeBron James on the team. The only exception The only exceptions were the Dirk-led Mavs from a few years ago, where they had, again, a bunch of really good players, and Dirk was unstoppable at that time. And you had Dwayne Wade and Shaq on the Heat. Dwayne Wade, again, was unstoppable at that time. So, you know, if you're going to win a title, you almost need stars, or you better have a bunch of extremely good players that buy into a great system that works for everyone, who's willing to play both sides of the ball. So talent kind of supersedes analytics in that respect, and I think that head coaching, you know, if Steve Kerr were on the Knicks, were coaching the Knicks, would the Knicks be a threat in the East? Of course not. Without Kerr, would Golden State falter? No. Coaching means something, but you have to take it for what it's worth, I guess, is my takeaway. Thing on Saturday was Zach LaVine winning the dunk contest over Victor Oladipo in the finals. Oladipo, you know, I already talked about him and the Magic. You know, the Magic are, I think, set for years to come. I believe a lot in Tobias Harris. I believe a lot in Elfrid Payton. I believe a lot in Victor Oladipo to all get better. Not a huge Aaron Gordon fan, but I certainly think he can be a nice piece on a championship-level team. And Nikola Vucevic right now is a double-double machine. So that team is set. Zach LaVine and I already talked about a little bit with the Timberwolves and Andrew Wiggins. And I think they're a young team who is one more young player away from, you know, this upcoming NBA draft. If they can peg someone to be a really good player in the NBA, then I think they can take that leap into pushing for a spot in the West, kind of join that Phoenix, New Orleans mold of at least pushing for a spot, not necessarily being up there with teams like the Clippers and the Spurs and all the juggernauts out West, but being a viable team in the West, which means you're a good team. I don't think Minnesota's extremely far away from that. It's just a matter of getting another guy or two, letting Wiggins develop, letting those one or two other guys develop around him. And Minnesota, I think, can. They obviously can turn things around, you know, quicker than a team like the Knicks can outside of, you know, a miraculous free agency or two over these next couple years. Yeah, I mean, for those who didn't know who Zach LaVine was, it takes looking him up on YouTube to kind of get the gist of who LaVine is. He's a ridiculous athlete. I mean, there's not much more to say. His dunks, I mean, I felt like his last dunk was almost his least impressive to me. I think his first, what was it, his first two or his first three? I think he actually might have had five total. I just know that there were at least two dunks that made me say, holy crap, in so many words. But, you know, I knew he was a ridiculous athlete. It didn't surprise me to see him win this competition. Again, it takes looking him up on YouTube to understand what Zach LaVine is all about. I don't think he's going to be a good NBA player, but as far as dunking is concerned, you can throw him in the competition for the next 10 years, and you probably have a finalist the next 10 years. It's just a matter of whether he wants to compete in it or not. I've got about 10 minutes left here, a little less than 10 minutes left. Talk about the All-Star game, some of the players there, their teams. The West beat the East 163-158, which, I mean, that score in and of itself kind of tells you how the game went and how important this game is and how much guys try, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Westbrook scored 41 points, which is 41 points, even in an All-Star game. It's impressive. LeBron was going off, especially early. He had 30 points, 5 boards, 7 assists. People that want to throw LeBron's name in the hat for MVP candidates, it doesn't raise my eyebrows. Like, it raises some. I think some people think it's a two-horse race between Curry and James Harden. And while I think that's somewhat the case, I don't think you can really count out LeBron and what he means for Cleveland. I don't think he's in the prime of his career anymore, but at the same time, that doesn't mean he's not the best player in the world. You give me a 7-game series, I'm still taking LeBron over Stephen Curry or James Harden. That's just my opinion. I think Kevin Durant is a top 5 player in the league. I think DeMarcus Cousins is a top 5 player in the league. I know that Anthony Davis and LeBron are top 5 players in the league. I don't know if James Harden or Stephen Curry are. They're two guys that I'm 100% dead set on in Davis and LeBron. But, you know, it's a shame that we couldn't see Anthony Davis in this year's All-Star game we did last year. You know, you can tack on another decade at least of All-Star games for him. 20 and 10, 3 blocks. That's what you're getting out of Anthony Davis. That's insane. To be a 20 and 10 player, have the skill set he has offensively, being able to move, being able to defend a majority of 1 through 5s in the league, at least 2 through 5s, and defend them well as potentially lead the league in blocks for 10 years with 3 a game. You know, he's a top 5 player in the league. He may be on New Orleans. He may be a Pelican, but he's a top 5 player in the league, no question. 7-game series, I'm probably taking LeBron before I take anyone else. So, to me, can he be an MVP? Absolutely. As far as the stats are concerned, I'm about to look them up, so I'm curious, and I haven't in probably a month or so, as far as what he's averaging this year. But from what I know, his stats are down, I guess, as opposed to his career stats, which are basically 27-7-7. This year, he's averaging 25-7-5. So, you know, a couple less rebounds a game and off of LeBron this year, composed as opposed to years past, where he basically averages 27-7-7. This year, it's 25-5-7. I think he's doing just fine. But, you know, other things to note in the East, as far as this game was concerned, Carmelo Anthony shot 6 of 20. I think if he wants to call it quits for the year and wait and see what New York gets in the draft or what they do in the offseason, be the worst decision for Carmelo in his career. John Wall had 19 points, 7 assists. Pau Gasol, 10 and 12. Thought it was kind of crazy, too. I mean, you can say it, you know, two brothers starting in the NBA All-Star games, but when you, like, see it and you see them tipping off against each other, it kind of puts it in another perspective. Like, these two guys are in the highest level of their profession going against each other on opposite teams in an All-Star game, which shows truly the highest level of competition. The best at their craft in the world are on one floor, and these two brothers are going against each other. at the start of the game to tip the ball off. When you think of it a little deeper, it's kind of crazy. So it was just kind of cool to see. Not that I'm a big Powell fan, being a Boston Celtics fan, but it was definitely cool to see. Kyle Korver shot 7 of 13 from the field, 7 of 12 from 3. So he was 0 for 1 from 2-point land, I guess, if you want to call it. Kind of funny, but at the same time, in an all-star game, not surprising to see Kyle Korver hit 7 threes. Otherwise, I would say that's it for the East. I mean, regarding this game and what I want to break down with those teams, you got Horford, Teague, Millsap, and Korver. I mentioned that already. Four guys, not superstars, but four really good players. So it was cool to see the Hawks represented by four players in this game. I think they deserve it. On the West, LaMarcus Aldridge, I love him. Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, already talked about. Marc Gasol, you know, barely touched over with Powell. Memphis is a team that's been dangerous for, it seems like, 10 years and continues to be dangerous. I think Mike Conley is one of the most underrated players in the league. Would not surprise me at all to see Memphis finally take that next step this season and win it all. James Harden, not an enormous fan, but 29-8-8. He's averaging close to LeBron-like numbers for the season. So, hats off, especially without Dwight right now. I think it's, you know, hats off to him leading the Hawks, you know, keeping them, or the Hawks, the Rockets, in that, you know, tied for the three spot. They're at the four, realistically, in the West right now. But they have the same record as the Portland Trailblazers. So, you know, not a huge fan of James Harden, but he's doing his thing in Houston, keeping them well in the thick of things in the West. Again, Russell Westbrook, 41 points. I don't think there's a better athlete and more exciting one player to watch just based on what he can do. You know, I kind of laughed at the fact that this is a guy that, if you can't tell how gifted he is athletically, then you're out of your mind. I mean, it takes one game to see him consistently pull up from 15 feet and pull up 40 inches into the air every single jumper. It's just absurd. It's something the league has basically never seen. That's the kind of athlete that Russell Westbrook is. So, you know, to see him play is just pure entertainment. Like Curry and Thompson for Golden State, pure entertainment. I just like watching them play. But I'm basically out of time here. Been fun as always. Again, I'll be breaking down the East on Thursday. Check us out on Twitter at RLFN Basketball for more details on when that show will be. But as always, you can also check out our blogs and podcasts over at the RedLightSportsNetwork.com. It's your host, Kevin Cunningham. Basketball Truth, presented by the Red Light Sports Network. See you guys Thursday. It's been fun as always. Adios.